Good morning, guys. Hot and cold Saturday morning. I'm Tom, and that was Mr. Cab Calloway. And I just came across that. It wasn't what I was planning. I you'll find it's hard to believe there's other tunes queued up on the music machine this morning. That wasn't the one I was planning on, but how could you not listen to that first thing in the morning? I don't know. So after weeks, no, months of promising and proselytizing and telling you I was going to replumb my heating system, I went down to the basement Monday night with plastic tubing cutters, and I said, okay, we're doing it. And I made one big freaking mess. Unhooked everything. I had two big brass manifolds for the heating system. That came out. Now, all the pipes, there's five zones of heat. All the pipes are PEX tubing, and they've kind of taken a set. They've been in there for like 15 years? Oh, my goodness. No wonder I feel old. So they've taken a little bit of a set, but I got it all plumbed up. And I got it working, and I can't describe the issue to you on the radio because it makes no sense, but suffice it to say I had an issue. I know it's hard to believe that I had it working, and it would heat the house. And I did several things because that's what I do. And what we wound up doing was putting in what's called a hydraulic separator. Which, if you don't know what a hydraulic separator is, don't worry about it. It's a reservoir that allows you to interface a lot of things easily. So I put that in. I made one up. This is something I've been making, and this was the most complicated one I've ever made. So I put that in. And then I plumbed it with circulator pumps that run on 12 volts DC instead of 110 volts AC. And there were several reasons for doing that. One is they're cheap. They're like $20 each. These are used for a lot of different things. I think they're used a lot for cooling computer chips in computers. But I've used them as circulators for photovoltaic-driven circulators for solar heating systems. And I've had mixed results. I've told you about that in the past. So I've got five of them. And I don't have them all hooked up. I only have three hooked up. And now, I only have two hooked up. But they those are working okay. It took me a day or two of noodling around to figure out. I've only run the system where I'm not sure about the pumps, if they're going to last. And everything is kind of really jerry-rigged together because once you take apart the heating system, you know, the first primary thing to do is to get the heating system back online as quickly as possible. Which reminds me, I got to write this down. I just remembered something I forgot to pick up this morning, so I've got to. If I make a note, I might actually remember. But I got it all running, and then there were some issues with the way it was working, so noodled around with that for a couple days and came up with some solutions that actually worked. I was just about ready to undo everything, put it back to some semblance of the way it was, and I got the issue worked out. It was a physics challenge is what it was. I had a water level that wasn't maintaining properly. Anyway, got that sorted out, and now I sent a picture of the installation Monday night to a friend of mine who is an engineer who knows John Siegenthaler. If you know who John Siegenthaler is, he's the guy who writes a lot about heating stuff in many journals across this country and the world. And Siegenthaler is based out of New York State. And he says, I don't want to show this to Siegenthaler. No, please don't. Because it's a rat's nest of pipes. Because nothing is, half the stuff is disconnected. Nothing is trimmed properly. I didn't want to cut things too close in case I had to redo it, but it is all working, so we will clean it up. I had to order some fittings. And when you work with PEX tubing, I don't know if you, if any, some folks I know out there in Radio Land work with PEX tubing. I use crimp fittings. What a crimp fitting is a PEX's plastic tubing, and it goes over usually a plastic or brass or copper fitting, and there's a ring over the outside of the pipe that you crimp with a tool. And it's kind of like a hose clamp, but it's a permanent hose clamp. And does a really good job. So I realized as I was changing some stuff around the other night, I had X number of crimp rings left, not enough. So I scrounged and I dug up enough to do what I needed to do and ordered that and some fittings, which I could recycle fittings from stuff I've cut out, but I'll save that for another day. I just ordered some new fittings, so those are coming, and we're going to make it very neat. And I will show the before and after picture. I'm not so shy that I can't show it. What is a rat's nest? But I'd like to show it when it's done, just to give it some semblance of what it's supposed to look like, and maybe it's a little bit easier for folks to follow. So we'll get that up on the website. I did not get any pictures up of our building this week, but I will, and we'll do some, again, some sequential photos. We have been taking pictures all along because we are making strides and we're moving more stuff in now. I just paid my rent yesterday for April, and I said, no, this is it. I'm done. No more rent. So the gauntlet has been laid down here on April 6th that we will be out of there by the end of the month. I said the middle of this month, but I don't think that's realistic right now. But we are getting there. So that's good. And I hit the heating, and I'm only doing the heating system stuff in my house at night. So, you know, because I'm so perky by the end of the day. Anyway, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls at 1-800-966-1039. Text is 601-207-4478. Okay, so I think they call this an earworm, you know, when you have a song stuck in your head. This has been stuck in my head all week. And it's not a bad song to have stuck in your head, but it nonetheless is there, and maybe we'll exercise it at this point. If not, you get to listen to it. All right, we're back. Hey, you know, speaking of down south, came across this today, this morning. April is the big month in Tennessee for snake bites. Better head back to Tennessee, Jed. Snake bites. Yeah, let's go. That's okay. My wife is some of her family members have moved to Tennessee. She says, well, it's warm down there. See, yeah, I know it's warm down there. They got little snakes. And here it is. In print on the thing, on the computer. Snake bites in Tennessee. Okay. I don't think so. I don't think we need to go there. We're not going there. I will go. I the phones are ringing. I'll get to them in a second. I got on Airbnb once, and I was just looking around. See, you know, I was wondering about the whole experience. And I did find in Tennessee, and if I go to Tennessee, this is the place I will go to. I mean, I would go to some of the music stores, absolutely. John Hartford, somebody bought John Hartford's house, and they had it set up as an Airbnb. Now, for somebody like me, this is like crazy. This is like staying in Louis Armstrong's house. You could stay in John Hartford's house as an Airbnb. And, man, I would do that in a heartbeat. If you're going to get me to Tennessee, that'll get me there. Anyway, let's go to the phones at 1-800-966-1039. We got the text line at 601-207-4478. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey.
I have a question on the Prius. And I am thinking about putting a towing package on a Prius V.
A what? Oh, a towing package. Okay.
A Prius V,
mm-hmm.
A station wagon.
Yep.
So have you had any experiences with putting trailer hitches on Priuses?
I have never done it. Priuses that have had trailer hitches. The limiting factor is that they're just basically hooked into sheet metal. So
is that right?
Yeah. So there's not a lot of structure there. So you're not towing big, heavy stuff. if you had a little 4-foot by 4-foot trailer and you're hauling like a water heater or something, I think it'd be okay for that. But I wouldn't go too far. I wouldn't anticipate going much further than that in terms of what I would be able to tow. Even though the Prius V is a bigger vehicle, you're still, I think, mounting into sheet metal and not structure.
Nothing really sturdy there to mount into, huh?
Well, there's probably a little bit more than on the regular Prius, but it still ain't much. It's sheet metal, and it's not that structural. It's not like hooking onto a hitch on a truck where you've got massive steel.
So you wouldn't recommend it if I wanted to haul like an ATV or something like that?
I'd want to check and see what the ratings are. I don't remember off. I've not looked. We haven't done any Prius V's yet, so I've driven them. And they are bigger vehicles, but I don't know. I think you'd be probably in the ballpark, but I'd want to double check on the rating on the hitch itself.
Yeah, you can get. I checked with U-Haul. They sell a package called a V. You can actually get one.
Yeah, what's it rated at? Do you know?
You call Toyota, and they say no, it's not recommended.
Yeah, yeah. And they no. I trust what they're saying. they make the vehicle.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Tom.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye. Yeah, the it really comes down to what the hitch is, what they say the hitch will handle, and specifically for that car, because I would be skeptical. I know with an ATV is not that light a vehicle. I think you're at the bleeding edge there. And there's probably nothing that's less fun than having a trailer hitch come off your car while you're towing something. I've never had it happen. You don't want that to happen either. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom. Dave from Bradley.
Hey.
Got two questions.
Yep.
One is, our church volunteer group's trying to get a boiler replaced for a older couple in their 80s. Their heating technician said it's going to die.
Mm.
I've found a used boiler at a place like Restore, and that's like 280,000 BTUs. They only need a 115. It's really good shape. Is that something a person can just nozzle down and still use effectively?
To some degree, that's kind of a big jump, though. I mean, that's like 50% bigger than you need. What was the boiler? Yeah. What make was it? Do you know?
It was a Superior.
Superior. Okay.
Good shape. All the pipes look clean. And
Have you looked on Facebook Marketplace to see what's there?
I haven't, no.
Yeah.
I guess I haven't seen any recently, actually, but maybe because I haven't clicked on them, so it doesn't flag them for me.
It's worth keeping an eye out. I saw one recently. It was a Pensati that was taken out of service that wasn't gorgeous, but it's a cast iron boiler, so it's possibly in good shape. A lot of people are swapping out fairly decent oil systems for gas. And it may be that you might be able to grab one reasonably priced there. That's where I was just telling my wife last night. I got Facebook Marketplace. I found several things that I needed for our move. One was a boiler. One was a Roth oil tank, and the other was a water treatment system. And I'm into those three things, which are not cheap dates, under $600.
Yeah.
So, it just is, when I'm at home at night, I look to see what's kicking around on Craigslist and on Marketplace, just in case there's something that, if it isn't in Sanford or something,
appears that we can't get, they wanted to just go buy a boiler. They used to have an account at a wholesaler,
mm-hmm.
but they are only allowed to buy them through a heating guy now, and of course then that guy's going to want his markup and all, which sends it through the roof generally. Are there any, we have two boiler guys, past boiler guys with licenses, they've retired and let their license expire. Is there anything ethically or wrong with, actually, and there's two master plumbers in the group as well, so it's like Is there any problem with us volunteers doing that legally, ethically, or anything like that?
That's a good question. I think if you're doing your own system, if we look at it this way, we're doing it as our own system. For you know, these people are having it done, and they've got these friends helping. I think it's a little bit less of an issue. Maybe if one of the people from Augusta is listening, he may call and say something different. But I don't see it as a big complication. It's not like somebody is saying, hey, I'm going to put this boiler in for you, and it's going to be $5,000, and trust me, I'm licensed. A little different because it's sort of in their own home, and they're kind of at least slightly involved in it. If you're really concerned, I would talk to the code guy in town and do a what if and see what they say.
Okay.
Or not.
Well, so, this is a cut and swap. It's not like rocket science.
Yeah. It's not a big deal. And if you've got folks who have the experience, even if they're not licensed, no red flags go up for me. I mean, I don't see it as a big deal. There is a safety concern here. But if you're really concerned about it, I would talk to the code guy and maybe have it inspected. Again, it's not for profit. This is a sort of a volunteer's thing. And it may even be that you get you could get somebody with a license to just come in and put the rubber stamp on the installation.
There is a guy that might be willing to do that, yes.
And I've done that in the past with electrical work. I would prefer to do my own electrical work just because of the cost, but I always try to find an electrician I can work with that I will pay to overlook my work and make sure it's done right. And when the inspection comes, you know, we have his license to sign off on, and then I kind of work as an apprentice.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Okay, Dave, good luck. Take
the
care.
Other question's on a Prius, if you got time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so when I watch that little screen there and it shows when the engine runs and the electric motor runs and it's charging the battery, it seems like it's always charging the battery. Like you let off the accelerator, it's charging the battery. But when you go to use the battery, it doesn't seem to go very long. So when I start it up and leave the driveway, if I leave it set there for a few minutes, the engine will come on.
Yep.
Then it's on really as soon as I back up and take off. And then when I come home, if I did the same thing after driving it 100 miles, it would do the same thing. But it's getting, you know, once the weather warmed up a little bit, it went back up to 50 miles a gallon. So
right.
Performance-wise, it seems okay, but is that normal?
It is. You know, the battery is made to be cycling up and down regularly. We don't want to see it bounce like from all green down to one bar. If it's doing that really like within a minute or two, unless you're going up really steep hills, that's an indication that there's going to be a hybrid battery issue. But I had one in the other day that was down to one bar and it wasn't, there was no power. I couldn't get my computer to link up with it. I went through several different things to try to get it to link up. I finally said, I know it's a battery issue. Let me take it. And I gave the person a loaner car, pulled the battery. I had one bad cell, and I had it back to them the same day. So it does happen, but usually it's giving you an indication it'll go into limp mode where you have no power. The gas engine runs, and the gas engine's running very lean, so it has no power. It'll run, but you'll accelerate very slowly. If you're going up hills, you're going to be miserable. And at that point, you really got to get somebody to take care of it because it could be dangerous. And that was my, you know, as soon as I saw that, I said, no, let's leave it here right now. Let me, you know, I'll clear the decks. Let's get, this was a student, so I wanted to get the car back to them. They were off that particular day. I said, let's do it. So, I think you're normal.
As far as goes, it doesn't seem to go. I don't know how many bars are there, 10 or whatever.
Eight, I think. 8 or 10.
But it stays up there between, say, 5 and 6 all the time.
Yeah.
I would think it would draw down to like 3 before the engine would come on. That's what I kind of expect.
No, that's normal. That's where we want it to be. So, we want it to be in that center range, in the center third of the the that screen.
So it's kind of like the gas engine's running all the time, underperforming, let's say, and the electric motor kicks in, like when you need to accelerate or need the extra power. Is that why where it gains the efficiency?
Yeah, okay. And if you're driving in town, it will run more on electric than it will gas, depending on the time of year. I mean, when it's cold out, the engine keeps running to keep the heat going, but it'll cycle on and off a lot. And as you've seen, now that we're getting some, occasionally getting some warmer weather, we bump up into the 50s, which is where we want to see it.
Yeah.
I got to let you go, Dave. Yeah. We're running out of time here.
Thank you.
Thank you. It is 8:34 here at the Voice of Maine. When we come back, we will take some more calls at 1-800-966-1039. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Don't be depressed. Hey, we're back. Paul, every week just about, I don't know how it happened because I'm not subscribed to it, but I get emails from Paul McCartney. I'm not sure how it happened, and it's not a personal email, but I take it as a personal email. Paul has emailed me to let him know about some new tune or concert he's doing or thing he's up to, and I feel honored. Anyway, it's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. It's 8:40. It's Saturday the 6th. I shouldn't say this, but it's yesterday was the 40th anniversary of my oldest child. When the hell did that happen? Holy mackerel. 40 years ago, it was snowing, and we lived out in Clifton, up on top of a hill. Did I say it was snowing? It was snowing. My wife gets up. She says, my water broke. I'm going to go wash my hair. I'm like, I was doing the Ricky Ricardo, Lucy, we got to go right now. And thinking we got, 20 minutes to get to Bangor. And but she wanted to look nice. And it was funny. We were just reminiscing about that the other day. And her hair looked very nice, for at least till she started to give birth. it was a good experience. Driving home that night, again, it was snowing. I was gone all day, and I get home at night, it's snowing. And thinking, boy, my life has changed forever. And indeed it did. Anyway, I just wanted, speaking of your life changing, let's get the music. Well, we got the music. We keep that background there. If your life is changing because you have a major appliance breakdown, you need to know Alan at General Appliance and Brewer. And he's on Center Street, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. He's there to help you to make sure that you get the parts you need to make your appliances work right the first time you try to fix it. And if you don't want to fix it, you just call Alan at 989-4341. He'll fix it for you. But he will guide you if you want to give it a go. And, if you're listening to Hot and Cold, you may just want to give it a go because that's what we do. So 989-4341 is that number. Our number here on the radio station is 1-800-966-1039. And the text line is 601-207-4478. And we've got no text this morning. That's interesting. But we got dial time. That's not going to work. Let's try that phone. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi there, Tom. This is Robert out in Shrewsbury. I got a question about wallpaper.
Yeah.
All right. I'm trying to strip a border that's been up for almost 20 years now. Yeah. And I'm having the hardest time getting that thing down. I'm using this stuff, Zinsser Diff.
Yeah.
Even doubling the strength.
Yeah.
And it's just not coming down.
And you just want to get the border down.
That's all I'm trying to do.
And you're putting a new border up over it or in that place? In this place?
No, we're looking at just leaving it painted at this point. We haven't decided if we're going to do a border again or not.
Okay, so it's just a border. There's no paper below it then?
No, there's no paper below it.
Okay. You may want to try a steamer.
Okay.
excuse me, have you tried slicing the paper?
I have, yeah. I've cut it. I've used a wire brush to try and pierce it.
Yeah.
I was working on it for 10 hours yesterday. I got all of about 10 feet of it done.
Isn't it amazing when you get into that kind of thing that it's just like everything comes to a grinding halt? You think, well, yeah, I'll be done in an hour. 10 hours later.
Tell me about it. My wife's got great aspirations for when she gets home tomorrow morning, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. I've had good results with steamers. You have to rent one normally, and it's unfortunate for something that small. Do you have a scraper, like a razor type scraper?
Yeah, I've got a razor. I've been using a putty knife, and it's just been a nightmare, though. Yeah. I mean, even it's coming off in like three layers.
Wow.
That's paper on top, then this film underneath it, and then I'm having to kind of sand it down from there.
Yeah. Is it on drywall or plaster?
Drywall.
Okay. Yeah, so you're kind of messing everything up in the process, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like fun to me. I'm just so jealous. I don't have a good suggestion other than maybe a steamer might help you. It sounds like you're gonna have to skim it out after you're done anyway.
It
may be time just to nuke it and scrape the hell out of it. But how big is the room?
It's 17. Well, I've got to go down a hallway too. That's about 20 feet. And then I've got a 16 or 17 by 13 room.
Sounds like it was really good adhesive.
Well, I think my wife, when she originally put it up, I think she used some additional glue. So that's kind of battling stuff on. Yeah.
I don't have any better suggestion. Maybe somebody else does, but you're doing everything right. It's just it sounds like it bond. You know, I think you got a poorer bond years ago when you put it on plaster because it wasn't perfectly smooth like drywall is. You know, the paper on drywall is pretty flat and a like material, and it's very easy to mess that up, I think, which is what I think you're discovering.
Yeah, I think it's the room where we have our wood stove, too, so I think it's had 20 years of bacon on besides that.
So. There's always paint it or put a new border over top, a slightly wider border.
Unfortunately, I've done too much tearing at this point and scraping and pulling
you're down that road.
That transition.
A steamer might get you there quicker.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Sorry.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. Okay. You're welcome. Bye bye. You know, my wife and I did a lot of wallpapering years ago. House we were in Bangor was papered. We stripped the paper off, and we papered together, and we did not get divorced in the process, and we didn't have fights. I would sputter, but I put it off for a while, and then all of a sudden we were in a store. I think we were in Home Depot. We found, at the time they were selling wallpaper, and we found patterns we liked. We had been looking and didn't find anything. But one of the things we found that we used a lot was, you know, we had old plaster walls. This house was like 160 years old, something like that. And we got I guess I'd call it a textured wallpaper. It's a wallpaper with an embossed pattern on it. And it really allowed us to hide a lot of stuff without having to do a lot of doctoring. Obviously, big holes had to be fixed, but usually it was just some irregularities in the wall. If you put just a flat wallpaper on it, it would be very obvious. But with a little bit of texture, a little bit of depth, if you will. It was very traditional-looking paper. It wasn't anything weird. But it did a great job of hiding multiple sins. And I think one of the last rooms we stripped the wallpaper off of, we used a steamer, and it did go faster. It was still slow, but it was faster than scraping. We would wet it, normally wet it with water and maybe some of the wallpaper removal stuff and let it penetrate and could get reasonable release, but a steamer did it quicker. Back to the phones, over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, good morning. I'm listening to the radio, and I have a remedy for removing wallpaper that works 100%.
Okay, what is it?
It's hot water and vinegar in a spray pump. You just spray the wall, wait a few minutes, and it comes right off.
Okay.
I worked with my husband wallpaper about 20 years ago, and that was what we did, and it comes right off.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Yep, there we go. We got I'm not sure that's that different than what he was using, but it's worth the try. If he hasn't already tried it. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, Tom, I had a question in regards to a hot water heater and wondering why this particular style is not more common in the United States. In the where I first saw it, of all places, was in Honduras. I took a trip there and went to a hotel and went into the shower. And the shower head was a basically an instant water heater. The shower head had a heating element in it.
Yep.
So the water came in, it was heated right at the shower head electrically.
Yep.
And out came the hot water, and it actually worked amazing. And I was just wondering why that is not more popular in the United States, and if it's an efficient means of heating hot water.
Yeah, it is an efficient means of heating hot water. A couple of limiting factors. One is what's the inlet water temperature down south, basically south of the Mason-Dixon line. The groundwater temperature would be somewhat warmer. That would be one advantage they have. If you're getting in the Caribbean or places like Italy, you know, the water, cold water is not as cold as our cold water, which this time of year is right about now is at its coldest. So you may not get quite the same amount of heating, so you'd have to slow down the flow, which may or may not be acceptable. But I think the other issue, and I used to work with a guy who was importing tankless water heaters years ago, and he would send me different things to evaluate that were in Europe, that were commonly used in Europe, and this was one of them. This is going back like 30 years ago. This has been around for a while. I think, and he kind of agreed with me at the time, I looked at it, I said, this is great. What a cool idea. The negative is you've got some huge electrical wiring coming into your shower, which would have to be on a ground fault interrupter. And the mixing of electrical stuff with plumbing stuff in the shower where you're standing naked with wet feet is of some concern. Whether or not it's a realistic concern, I think there's a conceptual concern there that has been hard to sell. But it does work, and it does work reasonably well. And if it's not a high flow shower, you know, you can get a reasonable shower out of it, depending on the flow rate. But I can tell you, to get adequate hot water, it has to be some pretty big wires coming in. And yeah, it's doable.
It was 220 volt.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple device, and it does work well. But it's got it obviously should be on a ground fault. And then you are the, you know, a ground fault interrupter is a device that protects you from getting electrical shock if there's right. a fault in the wiring. That's, you know, and we got them in bathrooms and stuff, and you plug in something and it protects you. It's a little different being under the flow of water and asking that ground fault interrupter. You're constantly at risk, whereas if it's a plug-in appliance, you're at risk if A, there's a ground fault, and B, you're in contact in the wrong way. In a shower, you take out B, you're in contact, you're in intimate contact. And to me, that's a makes me a little bit uncomfortable. I would try one sometime, but I would be a little reluctant about maybe using it full time.
Well, this one, like I said, was in Honduras, and I am not joking you, where the wires came out of this unit and met the wall, there were exposed wires with wire nuts exposed. I am not joking you.
Yep.
But I'm here to have this conversation with you, so it obviously was safe enough to work.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
thought was it's not a good idea, electric and water, like you're talking about.
Yeah.
But we heat our hot water with an electric water tank. Not everybody, but I do here.
Yep.
And that water in the tank is in direct contact, if you will.
But if there was a ground fault, it's back at the tank, and sort of grounds right there, back at the tank. So I've seen numerous electric water heaters that have failed elements over the years, and they fail right there, as opposed to being right over your head with the water flowing over you. So it's a little different. So it shorts right to the case of the water heater usually, and if okay. there is that kind of failure. So it's a little different.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. We got some text messages come through. Tom, just a reminder, Title 32, Chapter 17 requires all non-residential electrical installations to be done under direct supervision of a master or journeyman electrician. Okay. And that wasn't what I was talking about. I was talking about residential, and I would still have an electrician regardless. What do we got here? Tom, I have moisture between the panes of a couple of vinyl basement windows. Run online. There are window pros that can fix it. It's best just to replace the windows. If they are Home Depot windows, can I get a replacement sash? Yeah, I mean, if the window is under warranty, you can get a replacement sash or a new replacement window, and I would take some pictures of it. Try to find, you have to have the receipt, of course, and see what they'll do for you. I wouldn't be overwrought about a basement window that is got some moisture in it, but if you want to replace it, that'll be fun. I've had a few over the years, full-size windows on, say, a bedroom window or something like that, where the sash has failed. And CertainTeed, I think, we had some years ago, and they came, they had guys who came and replaced, I want to say they replaced the glass, not the whole sash. I could be mistaken, because vinyl replacement windows usually, they're custom sized, will have a serial number on them, and the manufacturer can go back and make that replacement for you without having to come and measure anything. So they may ask you for a rough, approximation, but usually my recollection is these guys came and they had that sucker in and out in, 10 minutes, and they were out of my house and everything was fine. Basement window that's off the shelf's a little different. And the warranty, usually, most sashes have a really good warranty, so chances are you are covered. We're going to take a break here. It is 8:55. When we come back, we will take some more phone calls at 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. And do I have the music? If I turn up the music, it always helps. It makes it a little more musical that way. Stay with us. We'll be back. I am sorry. I almost cut that off. I can't not listen to that whole thing. That is awesome. Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, two albums they did together. And then Louis's manager felt that he didn't like Louis performing with other people because it took away from Louis. I'm sorry. Somebody needs to get hit upside of the head on that one. Long story about his management, mobster type guy. He had several mobster type guys. And at that time, this is going back into the 30s, maybe even 20s, the common wisdom, if you will, was that a black man had to have a white man represent him. And they used cruder terms than that, if you get my drift. And Lewis was comfortable with that situation, but not necessarily, I don't know if it was the best fit. You got these two albums that are just absolutely amazing music from, 60 years ago now. Anyway, our phone number is hot and cold. Good morning again. Tom, that was a long introduction to the radio program for second hour, but it's all good. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text is 601-207-4478. We got a, I don't know if that's going to come up or not. Let's see. I got a text message here. A liquid propane water heater that you can put in the shower with you. I've seen, though, there's a variety of them out there. You won't get electrocuted with those. I think a lot of these don't have a standing pilot. They use a small battery-powered igniter to ignite the flame. So I think for a camp especially, it'd be a good fit. I'm not sure. I could talk my wife into having a propane device in the shower with her. If in fact we had something like, or myself, I just don't think it's necessary. I don't think there's that much. If you have an instant water heater in the basement versus in the shower with you, I'm not sure. Yeah, the energy conservation need is that great. If it is that great, you should be heating with solar or something anyway, if you're that concerned about it. Let's see. I've had a whole bunch of notes here today. I ordered a inverter this week for our solar system, for our new shop. Hopefully that'll be in next week. We can get that up and running. I had five cars come in this week, including, get this, sit down, held on to your hat, a plug-in Prius hybrid. And it needs some love, which it is in the process of getting. But it was 2013. I drove it yesterday. It's a very nice car. Needs a good cleaning and needs a I have to replace a fender. It's got a fender that was a little messed up, so I'm going to fix that. But runs very nice. And well, what else we get in? We got an Altima hybrid an Altima hybrid. 2009, a 2011, 2008 Prius. So that's five, isn't it? So, and then we had, we had 2010. Did I say that? I'm getting a little overwhelmed with cars as I'm trying to get the, trying to get moved. But we are slowly making progress. We got a Honda fit in a couple weeks ago that we got stickered. We're just finishing cleaning that up. And, continue to make progress. Oh, I got all the parts for I bought this. I'm not a big fan of Fiats, except they do look cool, and they're reasonable automobiles. And I bought this one because it was this really nice green color, like the old Volkswagens used to be. It's a good reason to buy a car, right? And it was automatic, so I had parts come in for that. I was waiting for some parts. It didn't need much. It needs some bushings and things. So all those parts came in. We're going to get that one wrapped up this week, hopefully. Needs a good cleaning, which it will get, and be ready to sell. And somebody's going to – I'd keep it, except I can't collect the cars. I have to sell them. So and that's a dial tone. So we got nothing there. We got nothing on the text. So let's give the numbers again. Phone numbers 1-800-966-1039. The text is 601-207-4478. I go back to my list of fun things going on here. I have an electric vehicle that is going out the door this weekend to somebody who's coming up from Connecticut to get it. And is very excited, and I'm glad for that. And that's one less electric car in the shop. Let's go back to the phones now. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom, Steve.
Hey.
I've got an 1850s farmhouse that I'm picking away at.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a number of rooms that are still yet to be finished. I've done the attic, and it's all balloon framing. The framing in the walls is, I don't know, 3 or 4 foot on center, depending on what they felt like.
Mm.
And it's plaster interior. And I think what I decided is that I'm going to, in this particular room that I've got, I'm going to rip off the plaster in the lath.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put OSB over it, and then, half-inch foam, then OSB, and then sheetrock, but not insulate the wall cavity itself.
Mm-hmm.
Let it dry to the outside. Does that sound right?
No.
Excellent.
why would you not? What is your concern in not insulating the cavity? Other than, forget about the irregularity for the time being. Why would you
sure.
not?
Well, what I've heard is that if you insulate the wall cavity, you can get moisture buildup sitting in the insulation, and it just doesn't dry out. And I think Restore Maine or one of those restoration outfits that does Maine farmhouses,
mm-hmm.
doesn't recommend wall cavity insulation.
Ooh. If they're advising that, they have an issue that somebody needs to talk to them about. a couple ways to get around this. If you're doing it yourself and you're on a budget, I would still consider insulating the wall cavity. And the reason is that, especially if this is an old farmhouse, the outside sheathing of the building is probably boards and clapboards over that. And it doesn't matter if it's vinyl or wood or a layer of vinyl and a layer of wood or whatever. It's going to breathe to the outside. So if there was moisture that got into that wall cavity, it will dry to the outside. the layer of foam on the inside is a good thing because that can be your a very high integrity vapor barrier to keep moisture from getting into the wall cavity. Excuse me. But we assume that we're going to have moisture that gets in there because air holds a lot of humidity at times. If it gets out into the cavity and passes through the insulation and hits that cold outside surface, it will condense, but it will also dry out. If you had a layer of foam on both sides of the wall, there's a little more potential there for a problem. So the way the easy solution is, if you're doing what you're describing, is to do the cavities with cellulose or fiberglass, either one. I prefer cellulose because I think it's a little bit better insulation. Or you could have it spray foamed and still put that layer a half inch over it. Spray foam is more expensive. But spray foam now eliminates that moisture issue. There's going to be no moisture buildup because it's plastic. So that's one way around that. It's not a cheap date, but it is, will make a heck of a big difference in the comfort. If you leave it uninsulated, you're kind of, you know, it's 2019. We do need to insulate. And if somebody's advising not to insulate because it's an old building, they need to get it talking to.
Now, would a flash and bat approach to the inside of that wall work? Or would that create the moisture problems?
To put a fiberglass bat in?
Well, if I went to Home Depot, bought one of those big tanks of spray foam,
oh, okay,
flash the inside of the wall, and then put fiberglass over that.
You've got to, it would be doable. You would have to have at least an inch and a half to 2 inches of spray foam in each cavity to make sure that we don't have a moisture issue. It has to be a fairly reasonable bit of insulation on the inside of the wall to do that. And it may be cheaper to have an insulation contractor do it. That being said, I recently got a quote from somebody for the building we're doing, and it was higher than I thought I would. I was higher than I was comfortable with. It was pushing $2 a square foot, and a lot of these do-it-yourself systems are less than that. The problem with the do-it-yourself systems is you don't get a consistent yield of product. The quality of the insulation is very erratic, whereas somebody doing this with, you know, an insulated truck with heated material, heated lines, gets a very consistent, high-performance insulation.
So, well, just for fun, when I tore off clapboards on the outside a few years ago, They had birch bark covering the cracks between the boards. Early Type R.
Okay. I've got to take a break. I'm way over. But one other thing I'll put out there is you could cut, and where you have irregular spaces, you could cut foam, say 2-inch foam, put it in the cavity, and used canned foam to seal the edges. And it's kind of, and I'll talk more about this after the break. Looking at the clock here, I just realized how far over I am. So I'm going to let you go. I'm going to kick up the music here, and I won't play as much music this time. And I'll come back. We'll talk a little more about this because this is similar to what I'm doing in my new building. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 9:24. It's the Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. And a caller brought up an interesting question about insulating. If somebody's telling you not to insulate for moisture buildup, you need to talk to somebody else. As we headed down that road, that discussion, I realized that I'm doing something similar to what the caller is asking about. I have basically spaces, the way this building that I have is constructed is 4 feet on center. So I'm using recycled foam that we had that really, we sold some of it. I wasn't real crazy about the quality, but it was, I said, you know what, I've got a building, I did the math, I've had enough for doing our building, so we're using it. So I'm cutting and fitting into the cavity that I actually have created. The framing of the building is only 2.25 inches, so I fill that cavity, and then I have sistered on the face of those every 4 feet, 2x4s, sticking out like a regular stud would, and put more foam in there. So I have conceivably 5 1/2 inches, 5 3/4 inches of foam. Now, the two layers go in. I put the first one in, and I popped the second one in over it, and they were able to cover over some of the framing, which is good. But the second layer, the final layer that's exposed on the room side, first layer, I don't do anything to seal it. I just pop it in. Hopefully, if I measured it right, it fits reasonably well. Second layer goes in, and then I strap over that every 32 inches horizontally, and because I'm putting OSB, 4x8 sheets of OSB over the face of that. So I have a working surface and a fire barrier. Before I put the OSB up, I need to seal the cracks. Now, where are the cracks? They're around the perimeter of the foam. And if I've done it right, the crack is not that big. Sometimes it is, and I use more foam. So if you start to analyze the cost, the foam that we got, the recycled stuff, was fairly cheap. Sometimes the quality can be pretty crummy, but it works in this application, and so that's what we're using. Now, it's got screw holes in it. It might have holes in it. It might have cutouts in it. We foam all the holes. Screw holes is easy to foam. The gaps where it meets the studs, in this case, we foam, and then we cover it with OSB. And it looks really funky, and I'll have some pictures of that up on our website. It just looks, messy. And here's the thing, just a sidebar to that. I'm buying canned foam, and I go to Home Depot, and they have great stuff for $3.58 for a can. You have to use it all at once. You can't put it down because you're never going to get to use the rest of it. So in this case, I would do big areas with canned foam, and it's fairly economical. It costs about 50 cents a board foot for that canned foam, which is a pretty cheap date. That's about what an applicator spends on his actual chemical. The people who spray foam for a living, that they might charge you $1, $1.50, $2 a square foot or board foot, excuse me. Canned foam is about 50 cents a board foot. Now, the reality is that canned foam is a one-part foam. It doesn't set instantly. Spray foam, as soon as you spray it, it's hard. Canned foam has to set for a while. It dribbles, it gets all over your clothes. Whenever I do canned foam, I put rubber gloves on, and in keeping with the Gozzi inverse theory of the universe, if you have planned for something, it never happens. With those gloves on, I don't even get foam on the gloves, much less my clothing. If I don't put those rubber gloves on, I'll have it in my hair, I have it on my pants, it's on my shirt, it's in my nose. I have a second layer of skin on my hands. And if you use canned foam, you know what that's like. It just doesn't come off. So rubber gloves make sense. Maybe I'm getting good at this. I don't know. But in this case where you have this irregular old farmhouse, getting sheet foam and cutting it and fitting it into the cavity, reasonably close, and then using canned foam to spray around the perimeter is going to give you a really high-performance system. So you could put 2 inches of foam in. If you had room for fiberglass, put fiberglass in, or just put in more foam, and you could shop for deals on foam. They are out there. We may have a little left over when we're done, but I doubt it. Which, by the way, we do have structural foam panels we're trying to sell that are on Craigslist. So if that's of interest to anybody, look that up. But the... I just went to Home Depot this morning and bought 10 cans of foam because we're on the last push for finishing up insulating the building. And I just don't want to run out of canned foam. I've got a bunch at the shop. I said, I'll have another 10 cans. I'll use it. We use some occasionally when we're making tanks. So we'll be in pretty good shape there. So hope that helps. Let's see, no text messages, no phone calls. So why don't I take another break and we'll be back on schedule at 9:30 here on The Voice of Maine. Let's see, what do we got? We'll go to the bluegrassy thing. That's what we'll do. It's time for some bluegrass, isn't it? It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, we're back. It's 9:37. It's hot and cold on Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. I don't think the sun's out yet, but it's coming and it's going to be warm. And the snow's going to melt, And it's all going to be wonderful. Eventually, you know, June, it'll be nice. It'll be good. Let's go back to the phones at 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi. I have a two-car garage that's not insulated, and I thought I might like to make it so I could do a little bit of work out there. And it's open right up to the rafters. There's no, you know, half story or anything, so it's easy to look right up at that and work with that. And I was just talking with a friend of mine that's a builder about putting insulation right up there. And he's going like, oh, you're going to have a hot roof. It's going to shorten the life of your asphalt shingles. He goes, proper vents would help some, but he said you really should put like a floor in and, you know, insulate that floor rather than go right up there against the rafters. So that's a lot more expense and work that I would want to do. It'd be easy for me to get right up there with a tall stepladder and put something up against the underside of that. So what do you think about that?
What, this seemed like an odd question. What color is your roof?
It's pretty close to black architectural asphalt.
Okay. And what I would do, what I would suggest doing, he is right. You do diminish the life expectancy of the roof if you do what you're suggesting, which is create a hot roof. But some shingle manufacturers will warranty their product on a hot roof. And generally speaking, the darker the roof is, the more of an issue this is. So obviously it could potentially be an issue. But the other part of this is that what I've read is you might lose 10% of the life expectancy of the shingle. So I don't see that as a big issue, especially with an architectural shingle, which has multiple layers, which in one sense might be a little more massive in terms of handling the heat better, or it might be that it just holds heat a little bit more. I don't think it'll be too much of an issue. If you did that, I wouldn't bother with prop events, especially where it's a garage. If you wanted to just pop some fiberglass into the fiberglass bats, I guess that's what you're assuming, into the cavity, it'll make it better than it is now. And I don't think you're going to get into big mischief there, especially with a building that's not heated. But he's right. It will make a hot roof. And if just to cover yourself, it's worth finding out what the shingle is, and if you can.
It's like that Ico. It's probably about 4 years old.
Okay. Well, you might be ready for a new roof anyway. So.
No, four, not
four. Oh, four. Okay. Well, then it'd be easy enough to look that up. And see, I don't remember. I used to. I think Ico is one that is okay for a hot roof, but it's worth taking, you know, just looking. You can probably Google it online and see what they say.
All righty. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye-bye. I don't worry about hot roofs. I think the energy in a house, it is especially a non-issue. In a building like this, a garage, maybe a slightly more issue. If I Google Ico hot roof, let's see what we get. If I can do this while we're doing the radio show and I got no phone calls. Ico hot roof. I'm not getting there. Okay, so you'll have to look it up and read a little bit, but it should tell you. If you can find it, just go right to dig up the warranty on their website and look at the warranty, and that will tell you. Back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, sir.
Hi.
I've got a question on some condensation on the windows on the inside of my house.
Yep.
The house is about 20 years old. Anderson windows, decent doors, but it's pretty much done it since the house was new.
Okay. And so these are the original windows?
Yes, sir.
And, you know, I think that this is the reason why better insulated glass is better, because you have less of a likelihood of this happening. That being said, if you're trying to combat the problem, the thing you should be then doing is looking at the moisture sources within the building and trying to control them. Specifically, ventilation fans in bathroom and kitchen would be an advantage to keep things drier. If the basement is wet, trying to control that for any number of reasons would be helpful as well. But okay. If you have, you know, or you replace the windows, which I don't advise if, you know, they're good in good shape. But if you are replacing windows because somebody put a baseball through it or something, you should be getting a low E gas filled window.
Okay.
And that would mitigate this problem probably from even happening.
So chances are it's moisture somewhere on the inside of the house.
Yeah, it depends how. Usually it's from a basement. If you cook a lot of spaghetti, I mean, that would be an issue. Again, that's why the kitchen fan and the bathroom fan, from bathroom use, showers and stuff, tends to contribute. I have a dry basement. I don't cook a lot of spaghetti. And in the wintertime, and I have a lot of low-E gas-filled windows, and I still have some condensation on the windows. Just okay. Because, we don't have a shower. So, and my wife.
Well, this is bad enough. This gets bad enough that, like, on our French door mm-hmm. in the living room or some of the other windows, the water will literally begin to run down the windows, and of course, then it gets on the wood and
yep.
begins to turn the wood black. And,
yep.
you know, we try to keep it wiped out and cleaned up best we can on the bad days, which
yep.
the colder it is, the worse it gets.
Sure. Yeah. How's your basement?
Yeah, the basement's pretty dry. Come spring, a day like, times like this, we can get some moisture. But during the winter, there's zero moisture.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about houseplants? A lot of houseplants or no?
No. The wife does do an extremely amount of cooking, for sure.
Okay.
So that certainly could be an issue when the stove, when the fan and stuff above the stove is not vented.
Okay. Well, that may be a consideration then to see about getting a vented fan in there to see if that helps you. You know, get a good quality one because obviously it's a hole in the wall of the building.
Sure.
But it will make a difference if there's a lot of cooking going on. It'll throw a lot of moisture into the building. That could be a lot of the root of the issue.
Okay.
When you get a fan, like for a kitchen or a bathroom, you want one with a good backdraft damper so when it shuts off, it seals. And you're not losing a lot of energy in that case.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck. I get nervous when people call me sir. Makes me feel old. I already feel old. There's a dial tone. Let's not go there. Let's see. No. Oh, my goodness. We got text messages here. Oh, see what happens when I start talking. Tom, I didn't catch the first part about the insulation. You're talking about insulating the inside or the outside of the walls. Thanks. Well, with the caller, we were talking about insulating the inside just because he's going to be taking the old plaster off. If you didn't want to take the old plaster off, you could blow the cavity with cellulose. And if you're working from the outside, put a layer of 1.5 inches or 2 inches of foam on the outside, strap it, and then reside. That is sort of the ideal for me. That's kind of the gold standard of the way I'd like to do it if this was a perfect world, because now you're wrapping the whole building. Every surface that loses heat is covered with foam and is thermally decoupled and better insulated than if it's not there. So let's see. Tom from Sangerville has sent me a picture of his dooryard. It looks like you're ready for a picnic except for the snow. And, man, you still got a lot of snow left. We don't have any snow down on the coast, but thank you, Tom. Another text message, Tom, my house is comprised of three parts, main house 30 feet wide, breezeway 12 feet wide, and garage 20 feet wide. House and breezeway have full basements, garage is on a slab. We need more living space for our growing family. I was thinking about widening the breezeway to match the house. Sure, doing a full basement under the addition, what would be the best option? It wouldn't result in nice cold floors. You could frame it up on posts, and I would insulate. I would have a reasonably deep cavity, it depends on structure, probably it'd be more than 2x6, but even with a 2x6, if you put 2 inches of foam at the bottom of the floor joists, full sheets, covered that with plywood or pressure treated plywood in particular, and then fiberglass the cavity, let's say it's a 2x6, okay? Got 5.5 inches of fiberglass, R19. You got 2 inches of foam under that's R14. You're up to R33. You've got a fairly good, well-insulated floor there that would be warm to walk on and is not on the ground. Not that it has to be on the ground. See, the thing is, when we put a slab on the ground, or put a foundation in the ground, we're now underneath that slab, whether it be the floor slab, or the basement floor slab, or the slab itself at grade, underneath that building doesn't freeze. So it's, let's say for the sake of discussion, it's 40 degrees year-round. It's warmer in the summer, cooler in the winter. It's above freezing. When you build on posts, today it's 40 degrees, but in January it's 20 below maybe. So the insulation really is critical there, because you're exposed to outside air, which can get quite cold. That's what insulation, and then same thing as it's just a wall, but it's horizontal. And we need to insulate it properly, and that layer of foam is hypercritical. If you're going to put fluffy insulation in the cavity, if you just fiberglass that cavity, you put plywood underneath it, put fiberglass in the cavity, I will personally guarantee you having cold floors. How about that? Nothing's guaranteed these days. I would guarantee it. A layer of foam underneath it makes a big difference. Let's see. What do we got? Another message. I have a 14 by 20 kitchen that is not even close to being straight. I have an island in the middle that is straight. Looking to replace the flooring with LVP. Do I start at the island and work towards the wall to hide the angles? I don't know. That's a good question. The way you've described. You're trying to trick the eye here. And when things are not straight, it gets a little challenging. You may consider going considering running in one direction. Does it make sense to turn 90 degrees and do it where you have short ends at the walls? Would that make a difference? Would it make it better or worse? And of course, color makes a big difference in hiding things, because you're now trying to mask what is a potential problem. So hope that helps. It's kind of hard without being there and looking at it, but I would be looking at, I wouldn't necessarily be using something that accentuates the joints. It might be something that's darker that would hide it better. So over to line one, hit that button, and there we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey.
I was wondering, are there any manufacturers that are producing a non-electric fuel-fired heat pump yet, similar to the idea of the old gas refrigerators, the one system?
No, not that I'm aware of. There's devices called absorption chillers that I believe they still used electric, but they used heat to do cooling primarily, and they were problematic. And I'm just trying to think. I sold a tank to a guy from Connecticut, and he put in, and this, there was a woman down there who owned a B&B, and he did this system for her. He put an 800 gallon tank in of ours and an absorption chiller, and the absorption chillers need very high temperatures. So he's heating our tank to 190. We warranty our tank to 180, and it stood the test. It wasn't a problem there, but the bottom line was, B&B, the lady wanted to have heating and cooling, and she puts in this big solar heating system. And she spent, if you're sitting down, $160,000. And she calls me because stuff ain't working right. And I wound up putting her in touch with an engineer friend who squared things up. And at this point, she's been basically screwed over, and I she had photovoltaics, I think, too. I'm thinking, why not just put photovoltaics in and mini splits? It's simple. This is not a huge complex, by the way. $160,000 was for something smaller than a main motel you might see on Route 1 somewhere. It was way smaller. I don't know how many units, 6 units maybe. You know, six mini splits? $20,000 if they're that much. A photovoltaic system, you can put a big photovoltaic system in to carry those. You know, it's a seasonal thing. You're not, you know, you need to generate the most energy probably when it's sunny. And I felt ill for this woman. The way he did things, he made a heat exchanger fail. I sent the heat exchanger under warranty, which shouldn't have been warrantied. It turned out it was a water problem with the city, caused a corrosion failure. And we don't warranty against corrosion because that's out of our control. I'm going to send her one for free. The contractor contacted me. She calls me up, says he wants $1,500 for the heat exchanger. I said, I'm giving him the heat exchanger. So I said, at that point, you need a different person. And I talked her through the heat exchanger part, and then I got an engineer in touch with her. And can you imagine? Oh. All right. Stephen Gardner wants to know, what's the hourly rate for me to come and tell him which way to orient it? I tell you what, Steve, send me pictures. Email me pictures, tom@hotandcold.tv. It's hotandcold.tv, like television. And it'll be a freebie for the day. I'm not sure I can divine the situation, but send me a picture. I can have a better insight. We could probably do that on text, couldn't we? You could text me. I don't know if we could do it on this computer. But anyway, we're just about out of time. So, yeah, but do it. Email me a picture if you want. I'll be happy to look at it and see what we can do. I don't travel. I do travel. I don't have enough time to travel. So when I do travel, I grit my teeth a lot. And the good thing about when I get in a car to go somewhere is I remember all the things I've forgotten in the din of the day as this. And Mondays, I don't know what it is about Mondays. I'm sure your Mondays are the same as mine. It's a three-ring circus. And the phone is ringing. I'm trying to get stuff done, or I have an agenda that I think I'm going to accomplish, and it doesn't happen. So, but that's okay. I mean, we'll get there. And I just realized I have not queued up the music for the end of the program because we are almost there. And Mr. Francis Albert will be lacking if I don't hit that button right there. And, I have to queue it up. It's at 9:55. We are out of time for this week. Easter's coming up pretty quick, isn't it? My goodness. Spring is, it is springtime, isn't it? I think so. I think that's what Frank told me during the break. All right. Well, enjoy the day. We're going to have a great weekend, and we'll see you all next week. Same time, same place.